Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractors Business Presentation of the Month. This monthly CT web series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of teaching contractors how to run profitable businesses. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry shares dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. If you've been a contractor for any significant period of time, you've been in the position of having to tell one of your employees that their work is unsatisfactory and you're going to have to let them go. That is probably one of the most difficult conversations you will ever have. This month's conversation between Ellen Rohr and Al Levy will provide a lot of insight into how to avoid having those kinds of conversations in the future. This month covers a lot of practical tips that you can put to use right away. Now sit back, relax, and listen to more great information on how to run a very profitable contracting business.
So let's get started. Al, the difficult conversation, you know, when you pull someone aside and you say, okay, it's not working out, how do we avoid having that conversation? I know I don't want to be doing this day in and day out, certainly not why I'm in business.
Well, you say it a great way, Al. It puts us on the right track right off the thing is how do we avoid the difficult conversation? And for me, I remember as a kid being in my dad's shop, there was a great poster on the wall from the insurance company. You see this person escaping the swamp and an alligator chomping. And underneath it, it says, it's hard to remember the objective is to drain the swamp when you're butt deep in alligators.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So for me, one of the goals was always to how do I don't get to the, have to make that difficult conversation. And for us, we were a union shop. And one of the things for us was that we had to have some sets of discipline. One of the difficult things that guys do out there, which we're all guilty of, is we just give them another warning and another warning and another warning. We're up to the 23rd warning, and they walk in that one day, and boom, that's it. On 24, you're out. And it's so inconsistent, so unfair to everybody. So one of the things that I teach with the clients that I work with is the steps of discipline. Now, my shop was three steps of discipline because I was a man. But the shops that I work with, who I love, they tend to want to do four steps. You know what, Al? I don't really care.
If you're a wimp, you can do four steps.
You can do four steps, okay. But four steps only. So let me talk about what those steps are for a minute.
Okay.
One is we close the door, come on in, we're going to talk about whatever that is. Now, the better you do on objective information, what I mean is not your opinion, subjective. So let me give you an illustration, if you will.
Okay.
Ellen, you're not dressed right today.
No, I look great.
No, Ellen, you're not dressed right today.
No, I'm thinking I'm looking sharp.
Well, that's not the colors that we wear here.
No, this is red, right? Is this red?
Well, that's not really the red, though. And you can see how we can go on and on. And it's all opinion.
I've had that conversation.
Yeah, and it's a difficult one.
Yeah, and I'm smart enough that if I'm on the other side, I might get you so confused that I walk out the door and still keep my job.
That's it. You can certainly get maneuvered. So here's two ways that I would say to combat that. One is to create an operations manual that details what you wear, what shirt, what dress, what shoes, what everything else. And one of the keys to that, L, is that you have to have them initial off or sign off. And where this brainstorm came from is because I did it all the wrong way.
Okay, let me just get clear here then. So in order to avoid having the difficult conversation, one is we have to take people consistently through a series of disciplinary steps.
Yes.
Okay, and prior to that, we need to be very clear on what we're holding folks accountable to. So what you're describing with this operations manual is a written description of what I'm supposed to do?
Yep, if it's not written.
It's not real. You taught me that, Al.
There's no question about it. That really gets us out of this thing. Two basic flaws that all of us as contractors have, Al, is that we rely on verbal conversation. Now, who do I remember I spoke to 6 months, a year ago, 2 years ago, and what I said at that time? And even if I did, how can I hold anybody accountable to
it? I'm getting too old to remember stuff, Al.
It's impossible, and nobody's going to do it. So the next step we did is we tried to write memos. But they're really one-way conversation. And what that means is you just write it up, you type it. And when you get really angry, you stick it in caps.
Oh.
And when you really get mad, Al, you put it in color. At the end of the day,
colored caps. Yeah. I'm serious about this memo.
Which has no teeth whatsoever. So one of the things we have to be careful about is this one-way communication. And what we learned is by creating an operations manual, which you have to initial or sign off on. Now, why do I keep coming back to this? Is because what I learned is this. If you have to initial or sign, there's a voice that goes off in your head. And it's your parents' voice that says, Johnny, don't sign anything until you read it, which is where the first time we finally pay attention to what this is. So this process, a string of memos, what happens is they get lost or they fall out of date or they, you know, and actually the way I found this out is because I had the guts one day to ask for
those memos.
I asked them to bring in their memos. They were missing half of them. And the other half, I'm sure they were headed under their pillow because it couldn't have been that crumpled naturally. And I think the rest of them, they used it to clean up the taco sauce. I'm not really sure, but it doesn't have the power of an operations manual.
Which is a binder with those procedures in it.
And
easy.
When you update it, you take the old one away, you put the new one, and we initial off on it. So I can have a set of procedures that say how you should be dressed. Now, would you like to learn the way to do it even better?
Yes, Al. I always want to do it better.
There you go. Well, here's what it is I would take a photo of you dressed the right way. And all I would do, Al, is just wait, because there's a day going to happen where you're going to walk in and not look like that photo. And here's the conversation. Al, the way you're dressed today, how does it look like this photo?
It kind of takes my dancing around right out of the mix here.
So the more objective evidence we have like that, the less that we're going to be in this difficult conversation. At the end of this first step, it always works this way, which is, Al, you understand why it's important, why we have to get dressed this way, and it's important as to our customers and consistency. Here's what we're going to do. We've had this conversation. Just going to have a note, the two of us are going to initial. I'm going to put it in your file. If we don't have to talk about it anytime soon, in the next 6 months or a year, whatever that specific time is, when that door opens, all's forgiven.
Fair enough.
But if we do have to talk about it, here's what you can bet. The next time it's going to be a formal write-up. That would be step two. The time after that, you'll be suspended or sent home. And the last one is you're out of here.
So
that's the four steps.
I'm thinking that it would probably be a nice idea in this manual to lay out those four steps.
Excellent.
And show someone. Now, I know as a podcast listener, you may not even have employees yet. Maybe one of the reasons is that you're afraid of all the stuff, all the accountability for you, for them. What if you hate each other? These are great words of wisdom to let wash over you before you even hire an employee, just so you know it doesn't have to be a disaster. It doesn't have to be uncomfortable. You can actually help someone succeed on your team because, gosh, I could fire an employee at any time. I mean, that is one of the options, but I don't want to go around firing people. So the key to a four-step, or if you're a man like Al, three-step process to getting, you know, to going through this disciplinary process is to save people, to keep your employee, let them know where the cliff is and that person is headed for it, and maybe they could change direction. Maybe they didn't even know they were off course, and now you have this objective measurement and you can help them get back on track, right?
Excellent. Yeah, that really is the goal. Our chance is always hoping that when the door opens that you'll be back on the right path. It's good for everybody.
So that's your rubber bullet, is the verbal warning, gets a little more formal with the written warning, then it's suspended, go home and think about it, and the last step is, you know what, you blew it and you're out the door.
Yeah, we love you, but go work for somebody else.
Okay. Hey, that is tough. Maybe we should roll play that a little bit.
Sure.
Would you be game for that?
Yeah, let's roll.
Okay, as I've been a fence testing employee many times in my life, I'll be the employee, you be my boss, and let's use this example of the uniform. That's a pretty straightforward one. And let's say we've already had the verbal discussion, step one, step two, I've been written up for not wearing my uniform, step three, I've been sent home to think about it, and now I show up today and I don't have my uniform on. You ready to go?
Let's rock.
Okay.
Okay, well, Ellen, come on in.
Hey,
need to talk. How you doing?
What's up?
Well, here's the problem, Mel. It's how are you dressed today? Looks like this photo.
Oh, you know, it was just one of those days, and you know, I was trying to get my kid to the sitter, and then I end up with a flat tire, and I thought I had a clean uniform, and you know, I didn't realize that this one's a mess. But I talked to Susie, and she said that I could borrow one of her uniforms, so I'm good. I'm good for today. Thanks, though.
No, I appreciate that, Elle. That's why we had a verbal conversation. That's why we wrote it up, and that's actually why I sent you home to think about it. We have a consistent image that we have to present to people out there in the field, and it wouldn't be fair if I had one set of rules for you and one set of rules for the rest of the employees, let alone our customers. So here's what's going to happen. You're going to turn in your ID badge and you're going to go work for somebody else. Now, we love you, but you're not going to have a place here.
I cannot believe you're doing this. I mean, I am your go-to girl. Customers absolutely love me. And, you know, when you need somebody to stay late, like last Friday, I pitched in. I help out around here. I can't believe you're going to fire me over this.
You know, if we hadn't gone through the steps of discipline, I'd be listening to what you're saying. But you've already used up all of the warnings, and this is non-negotiable.
So you're going to let me go over this?
That's correct. You know what? We'll still love you, though. Leave your badge at the door.
That was really good, Al. I'm running out of things to argue about because, it, you know, in my mind, I'm going, yeah, I did have a couple of chances here. Now, if I don't have the manuals and if I'm not willing to train, you know, a new person to do those procedures, you know, to follow the manual and to play by the rules and to develop those skills, if I don't have those things in place, I'm more likely to be held hostage by the person who's causing me to really compromise my integrity. If I think it's important for my employee to wear a uniform and they don't, and I turn the other cheek, you know what? I get really resentful about that.
You know, what is the message that you're really selling? I think of it this way, is a good analogy that I think will be helpful. If you're my kid, Elle, and I tell you that, you know what, Ellen, if you keep your room clean all year, come December, I'm going to take you to Disney World. Sound good?
Great.
Excellent. You come walking in and I keep telling you your room is messy. That's in March. Come back June, your room is messy. September, the room is messy. If you end up in Disney World in December, what do you know about Dad?
You never met it. You meant it, and you're really not a man of your word.
Yeah, and how can I possibly do this to the rest of the stuff? So we have to have some teeth to what it is we're doing.
And what happens, too, I know that, you know, as consultants, Al, we go to clients' shop where these situations have been allowed to fester, and oh, it's really a hateful environment. You walk in and, you know, it sucks the energy out of. Why would you want to have a business of your own if you absolutely hate going into work?
Yeah, you know, you feel a prisoner to you. I have to tell you, I was a hostage. The many days I felt that I worked for them, not worked for me. And you'll always be in this bind until you create these manuals, until you create the training center, and frankly, become a really good trainer. The reason we keep on these problem people beyond the steps of discipline and we don't like what we do is the fact is that we don't have anybody to replace them. So whatever they do pretty much has to be accepted.
Right.
But if you get into the premise of always being recruiting, always recruiting, instead of doing what I used to do, Al, which is we refer to it as the mirror test. Do you know what the mirror test is?
I think I do.
Well, that would be somebody quit. Somebody else walked in the door, we made them fog the mirror, and they were hired.
I think I've been hired for passing the test before. So, yeah, I know that. And really, it doesn't make you feel very special as a new hire if that's all that's required. Oh, good, you're here, you can start now, let's go. Whereas if you are more selective and you let them know that if you make it to this team, you're really going to be proud of being a part of such a fine organization, it really elevates everything.
To do that, though, Elle, you have to be always recruiting.
Always recruiting. And then, you know, what we're looking for here is willingness. And we've discussed before that really the only reason to let someone go is that they're unwilling to play the game your way. You know, as a bare bones business owner, the cool thing about your own business is that you can craft this vision and you don't have to compromise this dream. And getting other people to buy into that dream, oh, that's so exciting, and that's going to help you grow, grow, grow. So what you're looking for are people who see your vision and then are willing to do things your way. So, well, how, before you hire someone, Al, how could you, you know, how could you test whether or not they're willing? Is there a way to do that?
You know, that's a great question. I didn't always have the answer, but I will tell you, one of my clients.
You don't have all the answers?
What are you doing
on this podcast?
I'm doing the best I can.
Okay,
there was a fellow named Joe Haney, great service manager I work with. He taught me how to test for willingness. I had heard this once before, but never knew how to do it. And here's what it is.
Okay.
In the interview process, he has a clipboard and a series of questions. And halfway through, he looks up and smiles at the interview person and he goes, I know this is going to sound funny, but it says here I have to ask you to sing. Now, that could be embarrassing.
To sing? Okay.
So that might be embarrassing. So here's what. I'm going to start you off. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, dear Al.
And you know what, Al? If they don't join in, Joe won't hire him.
Get out.
No, that's just the way it is. Because all he needs to know, he's become such a great trainer, does the manuals and all these other systems, He's just looking for willing at this point.
It sounds a little hokey, I got to tell you.
Yeah, and flaky, actually, and much worse than that. I was sitting in a seminar, and the guy next to me was a fellow Long Island, New York, you know, prove it to me kind of guy. And I turned to him, and I says, isn't this crazy about the singing thing? And he looks at me, and he goes, well, up to 6 months ago, I too thought it was crazy, but everybody I hired was a problem. So I said, well, let me just give it a try, and here's what I can tell you, Al. I will never hire another person who doesn't sing.
I really like that. That's meat and potatoes. Because if they're willing to, if they really want to work with you, if they're really buying the vision, they'll get over that weirdness and just say, okay, I'm here, I'm in. And they may actually join in.
You know, also it comes down to this. You know, you come to work, you think it's going to be this is what you're going to be doing today. And what happens?
It's different.
You're going someplace else. Somebody didn't show up. Somebody got hurt. There's always all the stuff we have to manage. And that takes a willingness, if you will. If you're going to be so rigid that it has to be a certain way, you're just not going to fit with the corporate culture. You're not going to be able to do it. So one of the great tests of willingness is to be able to handle those kinds of things.
And so the pattern here that's starting to gel is that if we have procedures, and if we are willing to train people on those procedures, we don't have to look for the miracle worker, as you call the lightning in the bottle person who's going to walk in our door and fix everything in our business. All we need is a willing person. And if we're willing to train them on these procedures, hold them accountable for it, we can really grow the team and achieve our vision.
Well,
pretty exciting.
Yeah, you know, the magical person we talked about, the lightning bottle, you might find one. But here's what I guarantee you. You get the whole employee. All of the problems come with that skill set and the rest, or otherwise they'd be out working on their own, wouldn't they?
Yeah. And, you know, even with a superstar, I've been guilty of this, and I certainly my clients, you know, I've run into this situation over and over again. We find a superstar, and then we tend to look the other way when they break some rules. And there's nothing worse than in your own business compromising your integrity, lowering your standards, looking the other way, so that you can justify this guy who's out there making money for you. I mean, life is just too short.
You know, Elle, what's I've always believed, and I believed it in my own company because I did fire the superstar periodically when it got to that point based on those steps of discipline. I had another company who also had an all-star, but they knew he wasn't doing the things just quite the way he should be. And guess what happened when they fired him?
What?
They had two record months in a row of sales.
Okay, so once this guy's out of the way,
everybody else stepped up. Because finally they realized we're going to hold all the brothers in this picture the same. Everybody gets treated the same. And everybody below stepped up, and they went on to actually have record months. Once they were willing to show they were able to hold everybody to the same standards. A superstar is not going to make your company. Getting a bunch of people to be really good is what makes the company.
You know, and as you say that too, how many times have we been in the situation where we let the superstar go and then someone who'd been on the sidelines comes into the office and tells the owner, tells the manager, you know, it's about time you let that guy go.
Yeah, it's amazing how they all know.
No, yeah, they know, and they're sick and tired of you accommodating this guy, and it embarrasses them that you've been dropping your standards.
I hear you.
Yeah, so that's cool. Okay, here's another question for you, Al, and I imagine that this is a question on the mind of our dear podcast listener. What about the legal issues? I mean, sometimes I hear that people are afraid to fire someone. You know, are they going to get in trouble? Are they going to get sued? What about, you know, being discriminatory? What are the challenges there? Maybe you could share a little bit of that, what you've learned.
Well, I've learned over the years, because of exactly what you talked about, you're actually more likely to be sued for keeping on somebody who's incompetent. So in other words, every year if I ran these annual reviews,
that's really good.
Which I hate the annual reviews because basically, remember I told you about, let's use the Disney World example again.
Okay.
I told you, you know, if you clean up your room, clean up your room. So I don't say anything to you all year long. In December, you walk in with your Mickey Mouse slippers, your Mickey Mouse ears, and you're all packed up and ready to go. And I look at you and go, sorry, Elle, you're not going to Disney World. Because on June 16th, your room was a mess.
Oh, that's bad.
Well, tell me how it's different than when we only communicate with them once a year, whether it was good or bad. And here's where people get in problems with legal end of it. If you have a personnel file and you keep saying, this person is bad, 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 year after year, and you finally let go, what's going to happen is you're going to go out into the world and they can sue you for, well, you had them on for 15 years as being bad. So your record works against you. It actually works against you if you keep writing 15 years they were great. And now they go, well, you know, for 15 years you said he was great. So this problem is, the best thing is to have objective things and you're speaking to them frequently.
Right.
The trigger is the manuals or other measurable performance things that are not based on your opinion. They're objective. So they know where they are, but they need to know now. Every day, every week, every month, every quarter. They get a big slap on the back if they're doing really great, or they have a private conversation to coach.
So that's, as long as we have a record that we're holding them accountable and that we're treating people equally, that's another issue. It's discriminatory if we let Joe slip up 23 times and then we fire Phil for his fourth violation.
Yeah, you got to be willing to enforce everything that's in your manuals or any of your memos with each and every person, each and every time. And if it's three steps, it's three steps. If it's four steps, it's four steps.
This is really good stuff. Okay, so how about, what if you want to introduce some change? Like you've got the manuals and we're going to change the way we do something. Maybe we've got, there's new technology. Maybe you go to a seminar and you come up with some great ideas. How much time do we give someone to come up to speed on a new procedure? When do we start the clock ticking on the discipline? I mean, how much time do we give someone to come up to speed on training in general or on training on a new procedure?
Well, it depends on who you're talking about, a new employee to the company. Remember that drain the swamp, got to keep your mind on what you're trying to do ahead of time before you're in it.
Okay.
One of the things I find is when people bring new people on board, they spend a lot of time in the recruiting process and none once you're here.
Okay.
We bring them on board and we ignore them. So if you create an orientation process, which is disciplined, then every day they know what they do and you spend the energy up front. And Joe, great Joe Haney again, says the 2 weeks that he spends with them at the beginning of the company when they first arrive determines their success for the rest of the time they're there.
Oh, and that's so smart.
It's so smart. So the energy and work, whatever you're doing, that's where you need to spend your time and energy. So those first 2 weeks, getting them with the right people instead of the wrong people, getting them mirroring the right people, following the procedures and all of the steps in a disciplined fashion is the greatest thing that you can do for your company so you don't end up in a difficult conversation down the road.
Okay, now what if we change a procedure? How would you introduce change at the company? Change is always stressful.
Oh, yeah. It's no question about it. Change is difficult for all of us as people. And I usually ask this in workshop, and I get a lot of great answers. But here's the number one reason that I found people resist change. Now, they can hate where they are right now. The reason they resist change is they're afraid of failing. That is the bottom. They'll give you a million excuses, Elle. It's all about, we're afraid to fail. So your whole challenge is to introduce this new change and make it clear to them, what are you going to do so that they have a chance to succeed and you won't let them fail?
Okay, so sometimes resistance to change we're not going to hear the right words for the feeling that lies underneath, and that's fear.
Yeah.
Okay, so they may say, this is stupid, or this
why do we have to,
or works right now, or whatever, but it's that fear of failure. So there has to be some amount of time and a process by which everybody on your team is allowed to come up to speed. I imagine that the more complicated the procedure, the more time we would need to spend in training and on the sign-off.
Well, that also depends on the level of your company. For the shops that I work with that have developed an operations manual, they always go through the operations manual. So every time they bring up the procedure, they're ready and receptive to change, and they will change any process, any procedure, any policy, if this is the following thing. Give us a better, cheaper, faster way to do anything. We all agree it's better. We'll rip up what we have today and slide this new thing in.
So that's interesting that there are shops where change is part of the culture.
Oh, culture is
so
a great way to describe
it. So we have a procedure for change,
yeah.
And here's how it is. We're going to update the manuals.
We have the weekly meetings looking at everything we do, and we're always looking for a better, cheaper, faster way to do it.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Feel free to give us a call with your comments, or if you prefer, you may fax or email our office. If you're interested in running a very profitable business, you might want to consider attending Grandy & Associates' 3-day Basic Business Bootcamp and or purchasing our industry-leading performance-based software program called ProfitMax. For more information on either, simply call Grandy & Associates at 1-800-432-3300. 7963. Or check us out on the web. Again, the address is www.grandyassociates.com. A small investment in training can produce big profits. The Service Contractors Business Presentation of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.